Welcome to this episode of Why Pals Tales from Superyacht Laundry. I am joined today again by the gorgeous Katrina, aka Kat. How are you doing today?
Hello, I'm super good. Thanks for having me again. It's always such a good time to chat with you. A little disclaimer, we have been chatting for the past hour already before we started recording.
I have to say, it is too easy. You know, obviously in previous episodes, I have confessed to being a bit of a nerd about a lot of different things. I'm actually quite nerdy about a lot of things. I'm quite intrigued. And the world is changing at a vast rate of knots. And you are a specialist in nutrition. And I don't believe there's a few other things, but nutrition is also something that's got a massive spotlight on it at the moment. Yeah, so we've always got a lot to say to each other.
Yeah, no, it's so fascinating. I mean, the whole health industry is having such a huge explosion right now. Just everyone is seeming to care a lot more about their health and their well-being. And one of the biggest things and the biggest kind of, I know we're going to dive into this, but the biggest trends right now, which is fantastic, and I'm so happy to see the health industry moving in this direction, is longevity. That's what people are really gravitating towards, which is amazing because that's where we're not seeing diets anymore. We're not seeing, you know, cutting carbs and this. I mean, yes, we are. Yes and no. You know, we are still seeing it, but longevity is truly where it's at the moment.
Well, I think everybody's looking at the lifespan in general, but like, obviously, you know, obviously we're mainly female focused on this podcast. What we decisions we make will always have a knock-on effect later on, you know, whether that's coming to taking collagen or so your skin stays healthy, because literally we're all kind of heading towards this decline that obviously we all know is there, whether that's a fertility decline, whether your skin
age decline.
If you're not watching this podcast, it's probably a good thing because I am obviously in my 40s and I feel like my face you're trying to slide down.
My face is falling off my face.
Just like stay back, you know. Yeah. I think I've mentioned it before, you know, I love my nan to bits, but you know, all I remember of her is she looked like a basset hound. Like the jowls, you know, when your cheeks are like down here. I actually remember my sister touching my nan's skin. It's like, why is it like
a jerky?
I know what I've inherited, so I'm just like trying to prevent it at all costs.
No, but I think there are things that now with technology and with products, we can lessen the effects of what our previous generations did see.
I've obviously passed it on to you. We were talking about a podcast that I've listened to, and this physician I was actually really interested in. She believes that we should be living to at least 120 now. Mm. And what we can do, why not attaining that on a regular basis? But 120 years old, I don't know whether I want to live to 120 years old.
Well, going back to the topic of longevity, and the whole purpose behind longevity is not necessarily to push out your years of life, it's to have more quality of life in those years. So let's say if I had an expiry date at 85, right? Me focusing on my health and longevity doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to push that out to 90. It's always going to be 85, but I'm going to live to 84 and a half within good health, decent health, right? I'm not dealing with a burden of chronic disease, which majority of people in their 60s, if they're not looking after themselves, that's what they start to feel the effects of, you know, diabetes, heart disease, high cholesterol, atherosclerosis, kidney issues, like all this stuff, which is all preventable through focusing on health and longevity.
Well, let's get into it. So nutrition. So obviously, if you've not heard Kat's episode, Kat is the yacht nutritionist. And we got connected probably over a year ago now. Wow.
I think 2 years ago now.
Yeah, I don't know. But long time. We've been having chats for a very long time. But obviously, you know, let's give a little bit of synopsis. How was the Yacht Nutritionist created? Where did you come from?
Well, I did. So I briefly touched on this in our last episode, that it was never my intent to start as the Yacht Nutritionist and be focusing on yacht crew. I actually wanted to go into research and into research about the gut microbiome, because that is where the future of health is, within the gut microbiome. But from being a yachtie, I was a yachtie before I went to university. I was in university. I was temping on yachts. I started to talk to a lot of girls about my kind of ethos and personal philosophies and why I was no longer dieting, why I was no longer following all these crazy food rules that they were still doing, and how I had found so much peace and flexibility in my lifestyle. And I found, you know, I wasn't obsessed with food anymore. I had so much freedom from it. And I was really joyful. And they started to really love this kind of philosophy. And they said, oh, can you help me like learn this? You know, I had a girl, for example, she really wanted to lose weight. And this is one of the issues about diet culture. She really wanted to lose weight. And then she's smothering her toast or her rice cake with a whole avocado, whereas I'm eating a banana. And then she's kind of saying like, oh, the carbs in the banana are worse than her. She's going to put on more weight from the carbs in the banana. And I was like, well, actually, it depends on how much you eat throughout the day. That's what is going to cause weight gain throughout the day and throughout the week. But generally, people who think they eat healthy, but they just can't lose weight, they're eating too much fat, because the diet culture has demonized carbohydrates, right? So I'm just trying to educate on all this, where everything goes wrong and how information can be misconstrued. Yes, fats and healthy fats are so good for you, your unsaturated fats. But that avocado contains close to 300 calories versus my banana, maybe under 100, right? You know what I mean? So it's all about trying to get the right evidence-based information.
So you decided to go off, leave your thing, and go learn about nutrition.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I decided, I was always into health and wellness, but maybe a bit of the dark side. I was too obsessed. I was following all these. I had done every single diet under the sun, right? I have, you know, I did the Master Cleanse. I was a vegan for a while. Vegan, not from the like ethical reasons, more so from a weight loss reason, for wanting to cut out all the food because that'll make me skinny kind of thing. And I had done every diet and I was a yoga instructor, Pilates instructor, but I was binge eating and I was binge eating really hard and really bad and I couldn't get a grip on it. And then bring that person who before yachting was a yoga instructor, this living this healthy lifestyle, struggling with binge eating, bring me onto a yacht with all that food abundance. I really struggled because I couldn't maintain my kind of rigorous exercise schedule. And then we had all these very triggering foods for me in the crew mess. And it was a recipe for disaster. And I was really struggling with my mental health because I was eating like shit. And I felt like I just couldn't get a grasp on it. I felt out of control. So I decided I need to own this. Why am I struggling so much with this? And I decided to really dive in headfirst, learn everything about it, get a degree in nutrition, because that really helped me to understand food. It did give me a lot of peace of understanding the nutritional composition of food and stuff like that. And yeah, and then after I graduated, I was temping on boats while I was looking for jobs in research and development within the microbiome in the Netherlands or in the UK, wherever, you know, and anywhere that would take me as a freshly graduated nutritionist. I was interested in going. That's never a problem for me. And then I all of a sudden had 5, 6, 7 yacht crew clients. And I just said to Val, should I start the Yacht Nutritionist on Instagram? He's like, yeah, why not? Try it. So here we are, two years later, I think. And I've had like 70 clients. It's going really well. I have a whole supplement line now and it's becoming, you know, a brand on its own.
It's quite incredible. So I obviously just stalked you on Instagram probably from the very early days.
Yeah.
Obviously, it just made complete sense when I saw you. You know, the amount, I mean, I did a diet twice on board, you know, except, I mean, I've never felt such a pressured environment to like you can't go up a size in squats. Like you'll
lose your job.
Well, not so much lose my job, but lose obviously all self-respect. I don't want it to get tight. You know, I don't want to
go fear.
Not a size up.
Yeah. Because then everyone has to know. You have to ask, can I have a size 10? And then not necessarily that you'll lose your job, but you have the fear that you'll potentially lose your job.
Well, it's a very glossy, image-based industry, you know, and now understanding certain things, you know, when you're talking about binge eating, you know, when you're stressed, you know, busy charter, busy boat, you know, the guy that you were sleeping with decided to turn into a dickhead and ignoring you, and you're just like, give me the macaroons in the pantry, you know, it's a tough environment.
Totally. No, well, I say but it's funny because everyone says, okay, I'm a nutritionist. Oh, I think you cut out for a sec. What did you say there at the end?
I said that's before the chef serves whatever he's serve.
No. So that's where, okay, so going back to what the nutritionist really is. So I do kind of a plethora of things. I wear different hats under the name the yacht nutritionist. One of my main focuses of, yes, I could totally just educate. But what we're seeing, and is exactly what I was explaining before, as to what the problems that I was having is across the board. Like, so many girls are struggling with this binge eating issue on board because of that pressure of body image, your natural coping mechanisms being taken away from you because you're locked in this environment where you work and you live and you have, you know, toxic relationships, and then bring in all that food abundance. And we're just talking about the crew mess food, right? So it's mm-hmm. so easy to search for that dopamine and that pleasure response from those highly palatable foods, those ultra processed foods, which they're just going to be replaced. If you eat 10 Snickers bars, that it's back on the provisions list for tomorrow and it's just replaced, you know? So that's where I really try to get down deep and dirty to really help the girls understand and develop a healthier relationship with food, because a lot of it does come from wanting to look a certain way, but going about it in the wrong reasons, going about it with so much rigidity and obsession and just, you know, cutting everything out. With so much restriction is going to come binge eating. So that's where I really try to support the girls on board, basically stop dieting and find stability with food. That's kind of my main focus. And that gives me the most purpose because I was that person. So yeah. And then
So like the binge eating, you know, you said it's a coping mechanism, but you know, one of the things you've got to recognize in yourself, which obviously now with hindsight, it's an amazing thing to do because I'm not in that high pressured environment. You know, it's knowing what's hunger and what's a reaction. I think that's one of the main things that I've had to learn is, I either just want something in my hand, something in my mouth. Do you know what I mean? Like a kind of response rather than I'm actually hungry and I need to eat something. But it's quite hard to differentiate one between the two because the urge is to do it is really strong.
Yeah. So yeah, it's basically a learned behavior over time. Obviously it's harder and harder and gets worse and worse. And it's a bit of an addiction. It's a habit that your brain has created. So for example, a lot of girls on board, a lot of my clients, they're stress eaters and emotional eaters, like stress binges and emotional binges, right? They'll have something bad that happens. Maybe let's say they messed up at work. They get kind of reprimanded or spoken to by the HOD, but it's not really that bad. But their brain, you know, you and I now, because we have such a balanced relationship with our stress, we have resilience and all this kind of stuff. Well, we just, I'm so sorry. Like, I really didn't mean, you know, let's say you broke a crystal glass and it's a one of a kind Lelique champagne glass. We would just be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Apologize, right? Like, I slipped. I'm so clumsy, whatever. But someone who deals with binge eating and stress eating, emotional eating, they will severely internalize that and their brain tries to escape it by going for food instead of just kind of brushing it off and like yeah, I made a mistake and that's, you know, it is what it is kind of thing. And we accept it and we move on. Naturally, their brain says, oh my God, this is so terrible. This is so horrible. I'm a bad person. Food. Like, I can't deal with this emotion. Basically, I have to have food. So yeah, it's really difficult to overcome that urge, that impulse of going for the food in that moment when you're feeling emotional, when you're feeling stressed, when you're, you know, tired and all this kind of stuff. But yes, it's about being able to identify, okay, what am I really feeling? And how is food contributing to this? What is the food giving me? What is this masking? Because generally, the food is actually masking what you're really feeling.
And would you say alcohol is the same? You know, it can be the same drive to have that drink.
Totally.
You know, yeah. I just need a drink. It's been a really stressful day. Do you know
for
what
sure.
I mean?
Some of us, yeah, it's all about dopamine and someone's search for dopamine. So some of us, I was never someone to seek out alcohol. I never really got that same dopamine response from alcohol that I did from food. So food sends off huge dopamine responses in my brain. It still does, but I can normalize it now and it's much more balanced. But for some people, it's alcohol. They get a huge dopamine signal from alcohol.
Yeah. It's well, and then they're the only things that are really, like you said, in the confined environment on board, they're the pretty much the main things that you can access. Obviously, now I think there is definitely a bit of a culture change. You know, exercise is becoming, you know, the crews are edging towards being a lot more healthy than when I was on board. So, yeah, so we've ascertained that the working environment is prime location for things to get a little bit out of whack. And we've not even mentioned the thing that affects women the most is hormones.
Right.
So food and hormones and your cycle on board, it's not just like the perfect cocktail.
It's just crazy too that so many women just don't know what the heck is happening with their menstrual cycle and how that has an effect on you. We're literally just not educated. It's that simple. We're not taught about it. We just get crazy before our periods, which you actually should not be getting crazy before your period. That's not normal.
It is normal, okay? It's fine. I'm crying at Bridget Jones again. It's fine. Okay, I might have seen the movie about a million times, but it's fine because it's the day before my cycle. Obviously, we've talked about hormones on board quite a lot. So maybe we could discuss diet and hormones. How does your diet or how can your diet affect your body and your hormones in a very obviously hyper-focused, intense working environment?
Well, I have a really good example from one of my current clients at the moment. Actually, she's a chief stew on a 45 meter and she is carrying some excess weight that she doesn't want to be carrying. She wants to lose weight, but her problem is that she doesn't eat. And you would think, oh, well, shouldn't she be thin? Well, you would think because she has such a minimal caloric intake. But her cortisol is so high because she has the stressful environment that she's working in. Being a chief stew is bloody hard. And then also on a 45 meter, you know, you're doing everything. And then she's massively under eating. So the stress that that puts on her body. And then also the stress of really wanting to lose weight. So what we're trying to do with her is that we're trying right now to kind of upregulate her metabolism because it's massively downregulated. She just can't drop the excess weight because her body's in a chronic state of stress and inflammation. So as soon as she starts to eat more and her metabolism will start to increase and her stress starts to come down, that weight is just going to start shredding off of her body. And she noticed it we were working together for about 3 weeks. And she was like, oh my God, like I feel amazing. Like I have so much energy. I feel like already like my score is looser. Like, what is this magic? And I'm like, you're just utilizing your metabolism to work in your favor now. And then she went on charter and then her chef, unfortunately, is terrible. He's the crock pot guy. So he makes a crock pot of food once every 2 days. That's what they eat on this vessel. So not good enough. And she doesn't like it, obviously. She said it's gross. Like, it's just like a big mush of food. And she's like, I don't want to eat that. It's yucky. So, you know, she's back to kind of having a piece of toast with some ricotta and cucumber. We're trying to get her to have foods in the crew mess that she can make herself, you know, if she doesn't want to have the crock pot food. But obviously, when you're in the Bahamas, the location is difficult. We weren't prepared for this. So she cooks when the chef is away. She actually cooks for the crew, which is great. So we can make really good recipes together. I can kind of guide her with what recipes and stuff to make for herself and for the crew. But then when they go guest on, they get this chef. And this was a new chef that they had. And it just, it's not up to scratch at all.
A crock pot. It's not like back in, you know, war days where you'd have like stew on the fireplace for 5 days. It's the same goddamn stew. Do you know what I mean? Like, also, it's just mad.
I understand if, you know, he's new to the industry. That's what it is. He's green to the industry. But also, they're not having a full boat of guests. So it's only 2 guests on board. So he can't cook for these 2 guests and then the, what, 11, 12 crew. So
he's not cut out for the job, to be honest. That's what it sounds like to me. But, you know, like, you don't need to talk to me about it. I got fired because I pulled up a chef about crap food. You know, I actually got kicked off a boat because I kicked off about bad food for the crew on board. And I do think crew, you know, in this, I know obviously you always want to keep your job and stuff like that, but, you know, chefs are there for the guests. I get it. But they're also, though, it's very important. I think it's probably very rare what this girl's going through, because a lot, you know, I only had the one really bad experience with a chef.
No, I have to stop you there because, yes, no, I am not going to let you continue because I have worked with crew on over, I'm going to say 65 vessels. I haven't had one crew member work on the same vessel. So we're talking over 65 vessels in the industry. And I'm going to say majority of them is pretty atrocious. What's happening in the, I get photos all the time. Look, Kat, this is what's for lunch. Kat, photo, photo. And it's just so oily, so saucy. And it's just, you know, one lasagna for 15 crew, you know, a huge lasagna. But where are the other options? You know, it's, yeah, it's not good enough. But yes, some chefs are incredible. But it's not rare.
Well, okay. I'll take your word for it. It's very disappointing, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. It's, but, yeah, it's not nice.
It's, you know, the repercussions of always running such a tight ship, you know. I think, you know, some boats, you know, you're 45 meter, you can still have 12 guests, you know, breakfast, lunch, and then, you know, you've got your 8 crew as well. You know, it can be quite intense for chefs on board. Do you think, you know, obviously we get onto the industry, they need to talk to chefs a bit more about what, you know, obviously they do want to always give the client a good time, but what they're doing to crew, or do you think they're aware?
Do you think who is aware?
The chefs, like, what, you know, if they
I think the chefs are tired after trying to pull off the best meals for the guests. The crew, they're tired, they're massively overworked, it's a lot of pressure, and the crew get second best. Of course the crew is always going to get second best, but we need the second best to be of higher nutritional standard on a lot of vessels. That's basically the conversation, and that's what I'm trying to push for. But I mean, it doesn't take away that how overworked the chefs are and how much demand is on them. And a lot of the times, yes, you completely lose passion for it, and you're never going to make everyone happy, because you'll have, you know, the crew are probably harder to cook for, and I know they are harder to cook for than the guests. Because everyone has an opinion, blah, 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 you know, and that's so, it can be so irritating.
So in a way, it'd be nice to kind of support the chefs a bit, maybe give them ideas and options, you know. Yeah. Like,
I think that they need more support for sure.
So it's not all the chef's fault. bless them. I do love Chef, I have to say. They are fun. Make friends with chefs.
I really miss having a chef cook for me. After all that being said, having now to cook all of my own food, which is great. You know, I have the freedom of choice now, but chefs are incredible.
I have my own chef, for sure. Honestly, it would be an absolute dream to be that minted that there's just like a chef in your house. I was just like, just cook something. I like food. I really like food. Don't really like cooking it. I'm not really that interested. But, you know, I can cook, and I can cook quite well when I put my mind to it, but I just don't want to. I don't want to cook.
More so the cleanup, that's the worst. That's the worst of it.
That as well. Okay, so what's going on in the whole world of foods? Do we want to do nutritional trends or diet trends? Let's go diet. We're all girls. Everybody's on a fucking diet.
What are you on a diet? What are you doing?
What am I doing? I have been in and out of like the fast 800, so like ketosis type stuff. I'm kind of okay with where I'm at the moment. I'm, you know, I don't want to get too much belly fat because obviously that's the thing when you get closer to going through menopause.
Right.
You know, your body dynamic is changing. So I try to, although somebody told me this is so like, I was told at the school gates by another parent, because I said that I felt really cold this winter, and it's been quite a cold, dry winter in the UK, but quite a cold winter. And then he said about my levels of protein and whether I'm having enough protein, because, you know, I kind of moderate my protein and my carbs.
And are you having enough protein?
I don't know. Just try not to have too much. I don't know. I probably
should
like
be honest.
One chicken breast, one piece of fish, you know, I don't really think, I don't weigh anything, you know?
Yeah. No, but to be honest, you just said it. I do think there is, I think it's really important that everybody should weigh their food for 3 weeks, for a month, just to see the numbers. Obviously, a lot of people kind of get obsessed with the numbers and there's issue with that. But just to know, and just to know, okay, like this is what 20 grams of protein looks like from yogurt, and this is what 30 grams of protein or 20 grams of protein looks like in chicken breast or whatever. Like just to know those numbers are so, they can be so empowering.
I think it's just knowledge. Like a chicken breast is probably, I don't know, on average, like 250 grams in weight as it is. It's probably like on the higher side of the amount of protein that I should be having. So yeah, you know, but I have to say after losing like the weight after Esme, diet fatigue, can't be arsed. Don't want to think about it. I spent a lot of time and effort and then now I just don't want to mess it up. So that's kind of where
when you say diet fatigue, like you obviously still care about your nutritional profile. Like you still think about that when you make food?
Yeah. I mean, I try and use the recipes that I've kind of used, but like, I'm probably a bit boring. Like I eat clean, like I eat a lot of steamed veg, potatoes, because I'm from the UK.
Because you're British.
Not tons of pasta. I don't really like how pasta makes me feel, to be honest, at the end. I've had my gallstones removed, so I just have to be a bit careful with fats. If I have too much fat, so I was explaining this to somebody else the other day, you know, if I have a croissant with butter and jam, I generally feel a bit meh afterwards, or a carbonara.
Will you feel nauseous or you just feel like sluggish?
Probably more nauseous, like it's just a bit too much fat. Now I might be completely thinking it and it's, you know, they said that I could, but just if I have too much fat, I generally don't feel great.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's just me in my mind or whether that's actually science for not having gallbladder anymore, but I'd rather that than the feeling of having gallstones because it was pretty grim.
So painful.
I said to a lady that I'm actually recording for the podcast tomorrow, I would take labor pain over that
Wow. pain.
That's how bad it was.
Wow, that's incredible.
I think it's probably what it feels like to be stabbed in the side with a spear.
Wow. Did you get the green whistle? Were you sucking on that thing?
No.
So I had kidney stones. So kind of comparable-ish. They did say that the pain that I went through with my kidney stones was worse than childbirth. I don't know about that because obviously I haven't been through childbirth, but also I forget how bad it really was, but it was bad. It was so bad, the kidney stones. I was vomiting. I was on the floor in the bathroom convulsing. We called the ambulance. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we didn't know what was going on. And I had this just crazy pain in my back and my side. And then they gave me the green whistle, which is what they give people for uncontrollable pain, basically, in the ambulance. I think it's like a that might be wrong, but I think it's like a fentanyl stick. You're like inhaling some kind of, but it was really good. It completely took away the pain. It was amazing.
But it sounds pretty good. You know, I'd always be open to it if I ever needed it. So I wouldn't, you know. So yeah, my diet is not, I've not really been focusing too much on my diet at the moment. I've been experimenting with shrooms. I have to say that's probably my new thing. So just trying to get my focus better, all the different magic shrooms that are out there that are making gummies and capsules and, you know, although I eat mushrooms.
Basically like nootropics type of thing.
Yeah, I just kind of experimented with that. My sleep, I've always been a really light sleeper, so I have been taking CBD oils to help me sleep. But I think that's just a knock-on effect of having a child, because you're always like one ear open at all times.
Right.
You just become super sensitive to any noise in the house. So like if the dogs roll over downstairs, it wakes me up, which is just bonkers. So yeah, I've kind of been experimenting with that kind of stuff recently. But like some of the other trends that are out there. So I suppose it's kind of in the realms of intermittent fasting kind of thing, I guess. Obviously calorie deficit, that's kind of where you need to be. That's where I kind of got into the fast 800 and the fast 1200.
If you want to lose weight, obviously, yes. A calorie deficit is
diet trends. Mediterranean diet. I didn't realize that was a diet. Because a lot of the stuff in the bed is yummy.
The Mediterranean diet, it's obviously, as I live in the Mediterranean and you've been many times in the Mediterranean, you know that there is a lot of fried food. There's a lot of unhealthy foods. But the Mediterranean diet is basically trying to have majority of your intake from fresh whole foods, lots of healthy fats like your olive oils, your olives, your fatty fish. And, you know, you get your antioxidants in your red wine. So there's a lot of benefits to a Mediterranean style diet.
Yeah. I mean, I'll always enjoy it out there. I mean, it's like things in the meds I always say, like bread, best bread, generally.
Yeah. But this also, just to correct the language a little bit, like someone's diet is basically their general intake. So we can use the word diet in two different ways. Like if someone's dieting, they're doing something, they're trying to manipulate food in some way, some manner to lose weight generally. But someone's diet, like my diet, doesn't mean I'm necessarily following, you know, a certain regime or regimen of eating. You know what I mean?
Style of eating.
Yeah, it's like the eating style. Yeah.
I would quite like a style of eating where I'm sitting outside with a glass of rosé and perhaps to be
Aperol. Totally.
I'm not a fan of Aperol. So I've tried it many times.
I love it. It's my fave. Yeah, I love it.
So what else? Plant-based diets. So obviously on the rise, we
do
a lot of veggies, a lot of vegans out there.
Yeah, so plant-based are great, really good for anyone who has any autoimmune issues or autoimmune diseases, because they will absolutely lower inflammation and your inflammatory markers, which is what causes someone to have episodes of an autoimmune disease. So rheumatoid arthritis, alopecia, areata, what else is there? Kind of like your eczemas, psoriasis, stuff like that.
That's quite interesting, because doesn't the carnivore diet say it can do the same?
Okay, so the carnivore diet is basically...
Not like the raw one, just the normal one.
Yeah. So someone following the carnivore diet, generally, the reason why they're deciding to go on the carnivore diet is because they're experiencing some kind of like gastric upset. Maybe they're bloated all the time. They're feeling maybe like a little bit inflamed, and they decide to try the carnivore diet. What the carnivore diet is in of itself, in a nutshell, it's an elimination diet to the farthest extreme. But any nutritionist or dietitian will tell you that you're never meant to stay on an elimination diet, right? So this person will feel benefits, and they will feel like their symptoms have decreased, or symptoms of, let's say, IBS or bloating. They're feeling so much better because of this new diet that they're having. It's not because of the diet. It's because of what they have eliminated. But you're supposed to figure out what is causing you to experience those symptoms through slowly introducing foods back in. And let's say for this one person who's on carnivore diet and they're getting a lot of bloating, let's say it's cheese, right? Can you eat cheese on a carnivore diet? I don't even know. I think you can maybe eat cheese. Do you know? I think they eat dairy, right? Oh, did we break?
Yeah, we just broke. So the carnivore diet
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, see, the carnivore diet, you're saying, is obviously a limitation diet, but obviously a plant.
Elimination.
Yeah, but
you've eliminated.
They're both the same, but in the reverse.
Right. Yeah. So basically, you want to lower inflammation, and that's what the idea. The carnivore diet does not lower inflammation. It actually increases someone's inflammation. So if someone has an autoimmune disease, that would be the last thing I would recommend to them, because meat is very naturally inflammatory, whereas plants are not so much, or they're not inflammatory. But what I was saying with the carnivore diet is that you're supposed to, when you're following something so extreme because it makes you feel better, you're supposed to figure out what is the food that's causing your uncomfortable symptoms.
So you've got to reintroduce stuff bit by bit.
Exactly. Bit by bit, and seeing if you're being triggered or your symptoms are coming back. Chances are they might not even come back. But if it does, let's say if it's cabbage that causes a lot of stomach upset, you can fix that. It doesn't mean you're never going to eat cruciferous vegetables ever again. You just have to introduce them in a way in very minute amounts that your gut microbiome becomes familiar with them again, and it knows how to deal with them. So it's, as I was saying, I'm so fascinated with the gut microbiome that this is what I wanted to go to into research. You can completely change your gut microbiome, and you can heal it, and you can support it and let those little microbes flourish.
So that's becoming more thing of gut-focused diet to just try and recultivate what you're supposed to have naturally.
Totally. Yeah.
Because there are many things that most people eat not knowing that they just destroy your gut health.
Yeah. Definitely.
There are a few things that you would perhaps flag that are not going to be good for your gut.
For sure, sugar alcohols is one of them. So there are sweeteners that are used. A lot of diabetics will rely on them in a sweetened product. So that's anything ending in all, O-L, malitol, erythritol, xylitol, sorbitol. So those are generally very inflammatory for your gut microbiome. A lot of people will feel a lot of bloating from eating too many protein bars or having too many like diabetic friendly cookies or something like that because of the sugar alcohols. They cause a lot of problems with the gut microbiome. Yeah, there's a lot of them out there. I would say your ultra processed foods, absolutely. Those are probably, you know, even worse than the sugar alcohols. But the sugar alcohols are generally found in ultra processed foods.
What about cutting out sugar from your diet?
I think if someone is adding sugar into their food and onto, you know, into their teas and coffees, and there's no need for that, like that should definitely be cut out. If you're cooking with a little bit of sugar here and there, that's completely fine. Just as, you know, a tiny bit of flavor enhancer. If you can go without, even better. But for sure, sometimes I'll put a bit of sugar into a little bit of sauce or into Thai, like a pad Thai. I'll put a little bit of maybe a tablespoon of sugar into my big pad Thai that I'm making. So it's like one tablespoon is going into something I'm going to eat and get maybe five meals out of for me and my partner. You know what I mean? Like each of us not eating five times, but one, two, you know, three servings each or something. So it depends on the quantity of how much someone is eating, but for sure, reducing the amount of sugar someone is ingesting, it will be beneficial.
Well, and obviously, you know, we've talked about it before, like on board, you know, going to the snack cupboard, you know, taking in that massive amount of sugar as a quick hit, yeah. You know, then you crash, you know, a couple of hours later, because that's it's not going to help.
No.
The ups and downs.
No. So in that sense, yeah, those types of foods, obviously, having a Snickers bar every few weeks because you love it and that's your favorite candy bar is completely fine. But if you're having like six Snickers bars in a day and you're putting sugar into your coffee and then, you know, there's a limit, right?
There is a limit. I went to the supermarket the other day and I was standing behind a woman that had seven cans of Red Bull in a basket.
I can't believe people still drink that stuff.
Well, don't get me wrong. I think there's a time and an emergency for everything. You know, if you're feeling that hungover and that rough and you just need to, then maybe there's a place for a can to just get you through like the next 4 hours of your life so you can go home and die. You know, because that's literally got to be the case. And I have to say, back in the day, I was very guilty of hungover red ambulance. It was just, you know,
Coca-Cola
was just like the perfect amount of sugar and whatever crap they put in there to just make me feel so bad.
But this comes back to the conversation of everything in moderation. And that's my personal philosophy. Like, obviously, it's the 80-20, right? Majority of the time, I'm focusing on a whole nutritious, clean, healthier foods that are better for you, 20% of the time doesn't really matter. But for me and my history of eating disorder, I can't be 100% clean. I have to have those foods in my diet in moderation because I do love them. I love a little bit of ice cream here and there or a gelato or having that flexibility and that freedom in my eating, but also not gaining weight because of it. Like the weight isn't even a part of the conversation for me and then for a lot of my clients anymore. It's not about weight anymore. It's about, you know, what you're doing that 80% of the time and learning. That is what is most important.
Yeah. But it's balance, isn't it, really? It is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, when you get older, you're forced to find balance. Otherwise, the hangovers are just horrendous. So bad. Red ambulance.
No, that's basically I stopped consuming larger amounts of alcohol. I'm easy at stopping at one or two glasses of wine because my hangovers are just so bad.
No, my trick is that I try to only drink really expensive things because then, but you can't afford to get hammered on it. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, alcohol is readily available. I could get a liter. But it's not going to. So finally, to finish up, what was the other thing that I wrote down? Any supplements and stuff that are making a bit of a buzz? MNA?
MNM. So that has to do with NAD, NAD plus. I'm actually really excited because I'm formulating currently the best collagen supplement that anyone could possibly take. So generally we take collagen for hair, skin, and nails, right? But there are so many other vitamins. One you just mentioned, the MNN. MNN, selenium, inulin, glutathione, all these you will not find in a normal collagen powder, but I'm putting them into like this master collagen blend. So I'm really excited about it. Yeah, super cool. But there are some really trending nutrients at the moment, vitamins and minerals. And I think, you know, if there's no harm. So for example, you have to make sure let's say you are doing infusions, you have to make sure that vitamin that you're taking is water soluble. I would never infuse, unless under like doctor supervision, I would never infuse a fat soluble vitamin, because those hold in your liver and can increase to toxicity levels. So like for something, that's what's really important. So to make sure it's, when you ingest a water soluble vitamin in high quantities, your body just gets rid of it. You basically pee it out.
Okay. So the signs are good for M&M.
Yeah. But they are illegal in Europe.
What?
Yeah. So the European legislation haven't yet approved it for consumption, because I couldn't get that one to put in my super collagen formula. I have an NAD plus precursor, so it's similar, but it's not exactly the same.
Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah.
I'll take anything that kind of stops my face from sliding off my head.
No, that's amazing. There is incredible. So there was a video that someone sent me. I think it was actually Val, because he knows I'm formulating, obviously, this collagen supplement. And he sent me this video about, it was some guy saying that collagen is one of the worst supplements that you can buy. It's such a waste of money. But actually, there is so much evidence of how incredible it is for your skin and for your hair. And, you know, this guy, his argument was like, you can just take protein powder. But no, because it's the quantities of the amino acids that are in the collagen. They're in the right levels. So in the protein powder, they're not quite in the right levels. So that's why collagen is very specific to hair, skin, and nails.
My hair's been loads better since I took collagen. Like,
yeah, no, same. No, I noticed a big difference in my hair. I think we actually have similar, like quite thin, flat hair.
Yeah.
But since taking collagen, I definitely notice a lot of like more voluminous hair.
I give up with my hair. It's got a life of its own. Anyway, but it is looking a lot better than and healthier it was. But I take it like a gel kind of collagen. And I have done for a while.
Ooh, that sounds nice. Is it like a pack, like a jelly pack?
Yeah. Oh,
that sounds good.
Tastes rank. Even the mandarin one tastes like, and they do a mango version. It tastes disgusting, but you just get on with it. Because I don't want, you can get ones where you mix with different things, and I'm just like, that's just.
I'd rather just take the. Yeah, I was taking a liquid one. What was, put it in an omelette, did you say?
No, like, just get on with it. Like, you can draw it and mix it in, and like, all of this stuff. I was just like, it's like, shot to the bar. Just
no,
do it.
I was looking, I really like the gummies because they're so easy to take. I don't like taking capsules of anything. Even though I have capsules under my line, I just don't like taking capsules. I'd much rather pop a really yummy gummy that I know is giving me some kind of benefit to it. But the amount of collagen you have to take, you'd have to eat like 30 gummies. It's not possible.
No, it's, I agree with collagen. Like my hair, definitely. God knows what my face would look like if I stopped taking it. I'd be horrified. What else is out there that was on the list? Oh. Ozempic.
Our favorite.
We discussed it just because you were saying that you just had your first client that was experimenting with it. What's your verdict? Have you had any more individuals?
I think I've had about three clients, and then one person I personally know who has taken some form of a semi-glutide GLP-1 agonist. Semaglutide or the tirzepatide. So that's, the tirzepatide is the second generation one, because a lot of people don't know that Ozempic has actually been around since the 80s. It's not a new medication, but the tirzepatide is, and that's new. It's basically like the more advanced version of Ozempic's. I think Ozempic is fantastic for the right cases. For example, for someone that is dealing with severe binge eating disorder, and they cannot stop thinking about food. Obviously very useful in that case because it cuts any kind of like, you know, urges and stuff like that. But you have to be working on your relationship with food at the same time. You have to be developing a strong knowledge of nutrition and how to support yourself on this medication, you know, limiting alcohol intake, massively increasing water intake, focusing on high protein, you know, good nutritious foods. One of my clients, she's had a really positive experience. She had PCOS, and PCOS is a complex illness that we don't really know whether it's the insulin kind of, the insulin resistance causes the PCOS causes the insulin resistance. Like it goes kind of hand in hand, right? But the biggest recommendation is for people to lose weight who have PCOS, and you can reverse your PCOS. Anyway, she just couldn't lose weight. We were trying, and then she decided, look, I think I'm going to try using Ozempic to help me to lose weight. She had not had her period probably for about a year, almost maybe 2 years. She was really struggling with her med. Like, she would get a period off and on, nothing regular. You know, she would go 4 months without nothing, maybe a tiny little bit of spotting or something like that. But now she has probably been on Ozempic, I'm going to say close to 6 months. She hasn't lost like a drastic amount of weight. Maybe she's lost about 6-7 kilos. She's on a very low dose, which is perfect. No one should start on a high dose. But she's now had 4 months of a regular cycle, which for her is huge, because obviously her and her partner want to start to try and conceive. And yeah, I think for these individuals, it's amazing.
But it's management though, isn't it? It's not just, you know, I mean, it's, I can talk from my own personal experience. My mother is grossly overweight and, you know, coming up for her 70s. And we've literally like begged her to go onto it just to get, you know, because
get the weight down.
Yeah, just, you've got to kind of get it down because, you know, it's just a bit of a ticking time bomb. Yeah. And I think to individuals that are really struggling, like with emotional eating, you know, I do think a lot of these people that are suffering is all tied to their emotions. It's,
yeah,
you know,
big
it's
time.
Well, how do you break that? Because obviously, traditionally within medicine, they treat them for depression. You know, depression, a lot of the medication for depression makes you gain weight.
Yeah.
So you might not feel so down about the issue that got you down originally, but then you've put on a ton of weight, which will make you more miserable.
And it's this emotional eating cycle. You're unhappy because of the weight gain, and then you gain weight because you're unhappy. And then, it's this whole cycle.
Yeah. You know, I think the verdict is probably still out for this. You know, it's not really been around very long, but like you said, imbalance for some, it could be a game changer.
For sure. But like with any drug, it gets into the wrong hands and it's abused, you know? So you have girls like me who think they need to lose a few kilos and they just pop the injection instead of, you know, cleaning up their diet a little bit, exercising a little bit more, getting more steps in, they just inject themselves. So there's always going to be people who abuse drugs.
Well, but there's also a lot of talk around like Hollywood and stuff like that, that they're microdosing to like, you know, to just not have the hunger, you know, but that's not what it's designed for, I guess.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
But you brought up an interesting thing about your mom, though, because it is very interesting how society classifies individuals with kind of like food issues and food problems. It's only seen as someone who's super thin. I remember when I had my eating disorder, I wasn't thin. I was, you know, I was actually 15 kilos heavier than what I am now. People question me now, oh my God, are you okay? You've lost a lot of weight. Like, you look really thin compared to how they knew me 10 years ago when I was carrying an extra 15 kilos. I was suffering then. I'm amazing now, right? So it's like how we approach the whole food and emotional eating. It's just, it's not really an area that's touched on in medical science and for someone's health.
No, I mean, like I said, talking about depression specifically, you know, it's a lot of these people that are trying to deal with these issues. What they're taking fixes one thing, but then creates another. You know, there's always a payoff somewhere.
Yeah.
But who knows? At least it's around. There's a hope. for some. So
no, exactly. It does. It gives some people who really need it basically a helping hand. And that's what it is.
Okay. So to finish off, if you're talking directly to a lady on board right now, what would be the three things you would advise her to like? Yeah, say for argument's sake, she wants to lose some weight. They all want to lose weight. Okay. What would three bits of advice would you give a girl that's on board, snack cupboards just there all the time? What does she need to start thinking about?
Okay, this is something that I work on with my clients, a little bit of insider information into food freedom and what I do. You have to start eating according to a schedule. Food is not just a free-for-all. So for example, eating before you start work, that might not feel good for someone right now because a lot of people wait until 10 o'clock tea time to have something to eat. But then they're going into lunch at 12, so they're not hungry anyway, but they're still eating. So I would say you have to start breaking your day up into meal timing blocks. We're talking about guest off, right? Mm-hmm. Working 8 to 5. So starting to have something, doesn't have to be massive, but just having something before you start work, and then having something at lunch, and then you know you're going to have dinner. And then assess, okay, are you hungry in between 7:30 breakfast and 12 o'clock lunch? If you are a little bit snackish, a little bit peckish, then you can start to think about, okay, I should have a snack at 10. Are you hungry? And we're talking about physical hunger. So are you hungry between 12 and 6? A lot of the time, maybe dinner comes out at 5 or 6. For me personally, when I was finishing work at 5, I'd be straight off the boat as soon as possible to go for a walk, listen to a podcast, educate myself, get my brain interested in thinking about something else other than vacuuming walls and other than work and work-related stuff, right? Because being stuck on board and in the yachting environment can be really monotonous, and you can lose your passion for life and your passion for stuff in the outside world. You can be very bombarded down into thinking about nothingness. So it's really important to get your brain thinking about something. The reason why I'm saying that you need to eat in a structured manner is because then you're able to identify if, let's say, it comes, you just had lunch at 12, you packed up the crew mess, you had an hour break, tidied everything up. It's now 2 o'clock. You know, you have tea time at 3. It's 2 o'clock and you're like, ooh, I'm just going to sneak down to the crew mess and grab a chocolate. Or I'm going to go to the turn down cupboard and grab a turn down chocolate. Why are you doing that? You just ate. What purpose is that food serving for you? Are you bored? A lot of the time it can just be boredom because you're doing a total top to toe back dust, which you did 3 days ago. So it's the same thing over and over. As I said, it's monotonous, right?
Yep.
So that's where eating in a structured way can start to get you much more aware of these kind of these bad food habits that you have, and using food to give you that dopamine hit where we want that dopamine to come from elsewhere. As I said, for me, education was really important. That's what I was really interested in, was any kind of scientific information. That's kind of where I thrive. Any kind of knowledge and information in regards to science. So that would be my tip number one. Start eating in a regular schedule and pattern, day in, day out, so you can start to identify why you're getting this urge to creep down and scoff a few little chocolates. My second piece of advice would be mental restriction versus physical restriction. So this is a good one. A lot of people don't know what mental restriction is. So there's two forms of restriction that we see with someone who might be struggling with the binge and eating cycle. So we have physical restriction, which a lot of us don't eat carbs. You know, that's a physical restriction. So a lot of girls, when they first work with me, carbs are the devil, they minimize, restrict. Carbs are your brain's amazing fuel. They're really good for you. Obviously in moderation. I'm not saying eat massive bowls of pasta and bread every single day, right? It's all about moderation. And we want to get you comfortable and peaceful with this food that you think is, you know, causing horrific weight gain, that's really bad for you, causing inflammation. The list goes on. So physical restriction, we can overcome that easily just by kind of slowly reintroducing this food. But you're probably still dealing with mental restriction. And that's the way you speak to yourself when you're eating anything. It doesn't even have to be a food that you're restricting, but how you're talking to yourself. So for example, for someone that does struggle with binge and with the binge and restrict cycle, when they eat, let's say it's a carbonara, right? They really want it, but they're scared and they're like, okay, I'm going to allow myself to have someone because Kat said, I need to overcome this physical restriction to get myself more comfortable with food. While they're eating it, they're like, oh my God, this is bad. Like, I'm disgusting. I'm never going to lose weight. I shouldn't be doing this. They have this whole negative mental narrative in their head, and that's mental restriction. It's how you're speaking to yourself when you're eating. And we know through psychology, if you have mental restriction like this, your chances are you're probably going to massively overeat. For someone that struggles with binge eating, if you're negative towards yourself and you start berating yourself and bullying yourself and beating yourself up, you're going to eat more. And also, you're not going to be satisfied from what you had. So chances are you're going to go back for more and be like, oh, I may as well keep going because I already had, you know, it's like this whole spiral. So try to take your time while you're eating food. Speak to yourself kindly, right? Speak to yourself in a way like, this is actually really nice. Oh, the pasta is cooked perfectly. I love it when it's al dente. It's a little bit chewy. I love the texture. This taste, it's a little bit savory, a little bit sweet as well. And, you know, it's like trying to really be present with the food, because when you have that mental restriction, it's literally just a roller coaster going, like taking off and going to nowhere, and it's you can't get control back. So that would be my second piece of advice: physical restriction and really working on that mental restriction of how you speak to yourself while you're eating. There's a lot here. My third piece of advice, try to make it good. Goes kind of back to the first one. I would say someone that struggles with the binge and restrict cycle, you have to stop fasting. Fasting is holding you back, because that is the restriction that we're talking about with the binge and restrict cycle. So the first piece of advice of eating a regular schedule comes hand in hand with stopping. You can't be fasting. Maybe you can go back to fasting. And I have clients who have really enjoyed fasting. I have one client, when she was like thick in her binge eating, she never liked to eat dinner. She'd always try and avoid dinner. She just didn't like eating food later in the evening, but she was having really bad binges. So we wanted to normalize and get her stable with food. And now she's back to fasting and not eating dinner when it feels right for her. Doesn't mean she has to do it every single day, but she is fasting again. So it doesn't mean that you'll never do it again, right? But it's more like, okay, we need to work on you getting stable with food first and getting you used to your, you know, used to consistency with food, because a lot of girls will use fasting as a ways to kind of restrict from what happened the day before. So yeah, that would be my three pieces of advice. Do you have any questions about it?
Questions? Well, I could probably talk to you most of the day, couldn't I, really? But no questions. But what we might do is we'll put out some questions on social media. If you're listening to this and you recognize that maybe you've got some issues with this binging cycle or anything that we've spoken about on here, please get in contact with Kat. She's awesome. Great to talk to. Nobody knows better. But just having an initial conversation could, you know, help you dramatically. She's been there.
No,
you're right now and you've got a secret stash of chocolate bars that you took from the snack cupboard just to help you cope with the amount of ironing you've got to do today. And we've all been there, all of us.
Shoving the chocolates into your pocket and, just trying to escape what you're doing.
Yeah, so we've all been there. And this is why I got Kat onto the podcast, because there's now a solution.
It's funny. Yeah, well, it's funny, though, because there's so much stigma. There's so much shame around it. But to be honest, and so I onboard clients, right? I just onboarded a client the other day and we're sending voice notes back and forth. And she's like, Kat, like, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't want to have to tell you all this stuff. And I was like, girl, I've been there tenfold. Like, I've been so much worse. Like, I was one of the worst cases. So if I can heal and have one of the best relationships with food and, you know, have a healthy relationship with food and with my life and with myself. And honestly, anyone can.
I think, you know, obviously your cause, food freedom, to not, how much brain space could you free up if you're not having to freak out about food every single day? You know,
no, it's amazing.
And that, I mean, how much would you pay to not be freaking out about that every single day? Because all women do it. We all do it all of the time. You know, or we've got a wedding to go to, so we'll start thinking about like what dress we're going to wear, what my arm's going to look like, and that. So it's, you know, it's vitally important, and it's really cool that you've, you know, you're out there and supporting.
It's so funny because I keep saying it's funny. It's not funny, but what you just said about, you know, I have a wedding to go to, with women, it's always some kind of deadline or a goal, or I have to lose 3 kilos by X date. Like, what if you had lost those kilos forever and you never have to worry about that ever again? That's what food freedom is. Like, you don't have that kind of pressure anymore with your body, with food. It's so freeing.
It sounds like bliss. I have actually got a wedding on the horizon, but I'm not in the wedding photos, so I don't really care. Do you know, I love weddings. I love going to weddings, but I'm glad not to be part of the bridal light or groom party. You know, you're just in the back enjoying yourself. Thank you so much for coming on again. It's well worth talking to you, and every time I learn something brand new. So, and I think, like we said at the start, nutrition is changing a lot at the moment. A lot of information is becoming really easy to access. So people are understanding more and, you know, getting, like you said, a really big picture of lifetime nutrition, not just in the moment, which is a big shift and a shift for the better for all of us, you know. But we have to wrap it up. So if you're listening to this podcast, we have plenty of other podcasts for you to listen to. So please join us again. If we have talked, you know, and what we've talked about today, and you're struggling, please reach out to Kat. She has a wealth of information. She's got an insane course. And like you said, who wouldn't want to not stress about their weight in a day? So please reach out to her. All of her information will be in the bio. Thank you, Kat, for coming on. I'm sure I'll have you on again.
Thank you so much. Of course, we will be chatting until our ears bleed. That's what we're good at. That. We're really good at doing that. But thank you so much for having me. We'll chat
soon. You're welcome. Until the next time, listener. Bye.